Let's open our Bibles to Matthew, the 18th chapter. And this morning we'll be looking at verses 15 through 20. Matthew, the 18th chapter, verses 15 through 20. As we've studied the book of Matthew, I'll call your attention to Matthew chapter 16 and verse 23, where Jesus says to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me." So we see a beginning of the use of this word in the Gospel of Matthew. "Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me." And then when Jesus was asked about paying the temple tax, he said that he was not obligated to pay it because God was his father and he was a child who should inherit things without having to pay for their upkeep, since he was the son of a king. But in verse 27 of chapter 17, Jesus said, "Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them." So we see the word "offend" again. And then in chapter 18, as Jesus speaks of the little children who believe in him, Jesus speaks of them being offended and of the world offending them. And then he speaks of the offense of the foot, the offense of the eye, and he warns them against despising little children. Now in this context of offense, he then gives what I call some of the most important verses of Scripture and articulates one of the most important principles that we as a congregation of people will ever study. It has to do with personal problems in the church or the congregation. In verse 15 of chapter 18, Jesus said, "Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother." Now what we're looking at is we've seen that Peter offended Jesus by telling Jesus, "We're not going to let you go into Jerusalem and suffer and die." And that was offensive to Jesus because Peter hadn't understood what Jesus had taught him. And then whenever Jesus was asked to pay the tax that would support the temple, he realized that he wasn't obligated to do it, but he didn't want to offend those people who collected it because they were doing their job. And he didn't want to put them in an embarrassing and untenable circumstance. And then Jesus talked about little children and how the disciples had seemed to want to set them to the back and not allow them to come to him. And Jesus said, "We must not offend these little ones." And then Jesus understood that the people who followed him, his disciples, who had become his church, Jesus had called them out after John had baptized them, and they were traveling together. They were an itinerant church. They didn't have a building to meet in like we do. They just traveled with Jesus, and Jesus was the head of the church, and they were the body. So the church was assembled whenever he began to teach, whether it was on a mountainside or whether it was by a lake or sea or whether they were simply stopping and sitting down beside the road. Well, when you call men away from their homes and their families, when you call people away from their jobs and away from their own place of livelihood, and then you put these people together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that gets to be an extended period of time. That is several weeks and then several months. You remember that Jesus had his personal ministry here on earth for some 3.5 years. And some of the people who were with him had forsaken their nets and their homes very early in his ministry. So here are people who've been together an extended period of time, 24 hours a day. They really don't have a place to live. They're not staying at hotels and motels. Their food evidently has to be gotten from the area where they're traveling. And in these circumstances, I think all of us can very quickly agree that there are going to be misunderstandings. And what we're talking about this morning is not doctrinal error. It's not you sitting out there listening to me and say, Brother Penn preached something that's not in the Bible. Or it doesn't have to do particularly with the sins of the congregation out in the world. For instance, we learned that someone has robbed a bank and they're members of our church. This doesn't apply to that. It doesn't apply to the obvious public sins that church members commit. It doesn't apply to doctrinal errors, because you don't have to go through these things that are mentioned here with doctrinal errors. And you don't have to go through all these things with someone who's been caught red-handed in some crime or some breaking of the law. You don't have to go through these things that are mentioned here in these chapters in order to deal with that person. You don't have to do that. What we're talking about here is when people who are together, who work together and serve God together, either have been offended or imagine that they've been offended. You know, sometimes y'all make fun of my neckties. Really, that's okay. I've learned to forgive you, and I don't bring you up before the church over it. But this is really the thing we're talking about is, when we come in the building, oftentimes we exchange greetings, and sometimes in the realm of kidding one another or joking with one another, we may joke about being old or how bad we look or you're crippled up and don't walk so good today. And all these things have a very strong potential of getting the last piece of bread or just making a remark about someone or something. They have the potential of becoming a festering sore within us, so that the harmony of the body is impaired. And that's what we're talking about this morning, hurting one another's feelings and not knowing it. And that's why we have this process laid out here, so that if I hurt your feelings, you can come to me and we can correct that without it ever being brought into the realm of a congregation. Now, we'll see that there are some three or four steps here, however you may count them, that has to do with just settling the personal problems that exist when a group of people just stay together and are a part of a continuing whole. And I know that sometime or another, in fact, probably several times in our relationship, and some of you have been here 25 years or 26 years in my ministry, and I know that in those years I have surely, and I know I have, said something or not done something that you asked me to do that perhaps I forgot. And I didn't recognize some real problem in your life and come and help you with it or express my concern and sympathy. I'm sure that I have offended you. There's no question but what I have. And trying to preach the Word of God, there's no doubt about it. So when that occurs, we've got two things that we can do. One, we can say, I want to have this cleared up, in the sense of, I'm going to go to Brother Penn and tell him, you hurt my feelings when you said so and so. And what did you mean by that? Did you mean this or did you mean that? Well, now this is the process we're looking at this morning, when you would come to me and say, Brother Penn, you hurt my feelings. And you say, well, is there something else we can do without going through this process all the time? Yes, there is. And strangely enough, it's Peter that wrote it, which doesn't make it any more true or any less true, but, you know, he's the one that offended Jesus, and then he's the one that comes and asks Jesus in verse 21, then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times? Now, we'll look at that this afternoon in our 2 o'clock meeting. But notice what Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8. And above all things, have fervent charity. And we know charity means love. Among yourselves. Where? Among yourselves. For charity shall cover the multitude of sins. Verse 9. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. So what he's saying is that these festering sores that get started because of offhanded remarks or doing something we shouldn't do or doing something or not doing something we should do, that they begin to bear on us. And it's not long then until when I see you coming or you see me coming, we don't want to shake hands. And our greetings is sort of short and hampered. Can you imagine what this would have been like among the apostles and among the people who were following Jesus, who were constantly being deprived of food and clothing and not in their regular routine and away from their homes? Don't you imagine that their, quote, tempers would have got short with one another? I know they would have. These were humans just like me and you. And Peter said that fervent love will cover a multitude of sins. And you know this word that's translated sins here is the same one that is talked about when if thy brother shall trespass against thee. It has the same meaning. So we're talking about the same thing. So I can either do these things that are mentioned here and go through this process with you, which is a very demanding thing, and it has to be followed very closely. It's very specific. I can either go through this process with you every time we have our feelings hurt, or because of your fervent love for me as a minister of the gospel, and maybe because you can just say, oh, well, that's Brother Penn, you can forgive me without ever going through this process, and there's never a grudge, there's never a problem that exists over a long period of time that hampers the fellowship of the church. Now, I think that husbands and wives go through this process a great deal. Every time your wife hurts your feelings, or every time your husband hurts your feelings, if you had to go through this long, drawn-out process that's mentioned here, I guess we'd be busy doing that a lot, wouldn't we? But what happens? After a period of time, and I think even from the beginning of a marriage, a man and a wife have or should have such fervent love for one another that we can get our feelings hurt, but then because of this love, we can forgive and we can continue without having this be a barrier and a real problem in our lives. Sometimes it may not work that way, but I think most of the time it does. And since we're all human, this is the very kind of thing that makes our marriages and makes our relationship as a church continue without constantly having to go through this process that is mentioned here. And we will look at this process, and since it's so very, very important, and I realize that 12 noon is when the bell rings, if I'm just going to stop wherever we get to it, because I want to show you that this entire chapter deals with this particular circumstance, and this is important. I know that it's not something we usually preach about, but we should have been preaching about it all the time, because it is a part of what keeps a church from actually deteriorating and actually just having people drop out here and there without anyone ever knowing why. We have that all the time, don't we? And I'm sure there are families and there are individuals who have left this church with their feelings hurt and no one ever really knew about it. They just said, well, I don't want to cause any trouble. My feelings are hurt. I won't be back. And that happens. It happens a lot. And it wouldn't happen if we could have this kind of circumstance of fervent love, or if that won't handle it, if it's some problem that goes beyond that, we can deal with it this way. You know, we've had some people in Southwest Church who've come to me and said, Brother Penn, we're going to unite with another church, and I'd like 5 minutes on Sunday morning to tell the people how much I love them and what we're going to do. I like that, to be quite frank with you. Don't you? Instead of just, where's the Smith family? I don't know. Nobody's heard from them. Well, 3 weeks later, you get a phone call and say, Brother Penn, they've joined so-and-so church. And that's all you ever know. You never know what happened. You never know what offended them. You just know that they're here, and 3 weeks later, they've joined another church, and you get a request for the letter. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to grant it probably, because we usually do, but you can't go around asking, well, what made you mad? This is a very practical thing. But I like it when people come to me and say, Brother Penn, we've decided that the Lord wants us to be a member of a certain church, or we're going to move a certain church, and I'd like 5 minutes Sunday morning. You know, we've had people do that. You remember that? And they'd come here and stand and say, I love all of you, appreciate you, and we're going to go because. I think that's a really Christian thing to do, don't you? Instead of just not show up for 3 weeks, the next thing you know, we get a request for a letter. That's not an upfront, out front way to do things. It shows carrying grudges. It shows pouting. And these things are not taught to us in the Word of God. Now, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. The word brother here means near kinsman in the plural. It means a vital community based on identity of origin. That is, life, a community based upon mutual needs and aims. So we are a community. We are a koinonia. We are a group of God's people. We are a church. And this we know is a church because, if you'll notice, in the next few verses, the Bible says, tell it to the church. And if he neglect to hear the church. So we got the word ecclesia here, which is what we are. We are a church. So this has to do with this church. This is how we operate. It's very specific. We're talking about a brother in the church. Trespass. The word means to miss or err from, as from the mark, to swerve from truth and right, to go wrong, to sin. So if your brother does something that is an offense to you, whether it has to do with swerving from that which is right or missing the mark in your estimation, some way, somehow, you feel like you've been done wrong by this person in whatever area it may be. It may be that when you were coming in, he didn't hold the door open from you. And you say, well, that's a pretty small thing. But aren't most church problems pretty small things? Now, I'm not talking about doctrine, about baptism, things like that, but mostly aren't they? And aren't a lot of things just small stuff? You say, well, we were coming in and he saw me and he didn't open the door. And if that's the way they feel, I'll just go somewhere else. It happens, people. And he says, well, nobody would ever leave a church over some minor issue like that. Happens all the time. So if this happens to you, go. And this is a very strong word. It means to lead on or away undercover with the idea of stealth, without notice or noise. So it has the idea of secrecy. Go to your brother in a undercover, secret sort of way. Don't accost him in the vestibule when everybody else is standing around and say, why didn't you hold that door open for me? Eh, you got a row going then, okay? Go to him undercover, go to him secretly, and tell him his fault. Now that is a phrase, and it has the idea of taking evidence and showing the person that he or she is wrong and bringing it to light and exposing it alone. And that's emphasized. It means single, without company, without anybody else going with you. Now notice the conclusion of that. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. That is, if he learns by hearing and is informed by what you say, you have gained, and that means to derive profit or advantage from. So what you've done, you have salvaged a relationship so that you can depend upon that person to be of profit to you and to have a part in your life that is very positive. You can still depend upon them to contribute to your well-being. Thou hast gained thy brother. If he listens to you, he will remain a source of benefit and help to you. Now that's where it ought to stop. Right there. But sometimes it doesn't. Now, you know, I think this is a true statement. That if I offend you, and you go and get in the car, and as you drive off the parking lot, you say to your wife, you know, Brother Penn really offended me this morning. So you have already stepped outside this teaching. You shouldn't have told her until you tell me first. Because if me and you can get it straightened up, then she'll never be involved in it. She will never know about it, and she will never have any problem with it. You see, the more people you involve in your personal problems, you may get them settled quickly, but then you've got to go make the statement that all these people have got to see and hear in order to be clear to the issue. So when it comes to personal problems, you ought to keep them to just as few people as you possibly can. But we usually do the very opposite, do we not? We usually tell a lot of people about how badly our feelings have been hurt, but we never tell the people who can do something about it. We've experienced that very lately here at Southwest Church. I think there were people who were offended whenever we began to talk about selling our property. And I think instead of telling us, look, let's talk about this thing and work on it, I think they just left. Now we'll never know. They haven't called us. We hadn't called them. People that we loved and associated with right here in this church for years. You see what happens, if there had been, say, look, y'all are going to move, so what we're going to do is find another church before you move so that we can get settled. You know, it'd been good if they'd come and said, Brother Penn, can we use the pulpit and tell everybody how much we appreciated the years together? But since eventually y'all will be moving, we just feel like we don't want to move, so we'll find a church around here somewhere. Wouldn't that have been helpful to all of us? Now, we don't know whether these people like us, love us, hate us, despise us, but it's surely been spread everywhere, hadn't it? And I mean, they just explained, well, you know, we built that church and then they just up and sell the thing. Now, we don't know. They might have been very positive about it. Said, well, these are good people who are trying to do right. But we don't know. We never talked about it. Do you see how churches ought to? He said, well, you know, I just feel bad going and telling this guy hurt my feelings. If you feel bad about it, then don't. Then either get courage enough to do it or forget it. Now, but if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more. One or two more what? One or two more people. Now it does state one or two more because in the mouth of two witnesses, so you're one and one is one and one make two, or you can take two and yourself, which would make three, or the two would be witnesses and you would simply let them decide. We get more people involved. If he will not hear, if he will not learn by your talking, take, that is to take to oneself, which literally means guide them to this person, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. Now the word witness is someone who remembers, one who has information or knowledge of a thing and can therefore give information concerning or bring to light or confirm anything. Notice it states every word, that is the thing spoken, the matter of the affair, may be established, that is to stand as opposed to falling, therefore means the truth. In Deuteronomy 19:15, 2 Corinthians 13:1, this is a practice that God has used since the Mosaic Law. Paul invokes it to the Corinthian church, which means that this practice of two or three witnesses in settling a matter is still a part of the lifestyle of a New Testament church. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it to the church. The word neglect here means to hear beside, to hear imperfectly, to hear wrong or misunderstand, not to listen, to take no heed, pretend not to hear. It has the idea of someone who just, okay, say what you got to say, but I'm not going to believe it and I'm not going to act on it. It's a person who's intransigent. It doesn't mean someone who can't hear physically. It's just someone who says, okay, say your piece, but I'll tell you one thing, I'm going to believe just like I believe now after you get through saying it. You ever run into that kind of circumstance? Tell it to the church. It means to utter definite words, to enunciate words and things to auditors, and commune respecting them. That is, tell the church means to give the circumstances of the entire thing. And if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Neglect to hear the church, same word. He just refuses to listen. He's very just difficult to deal with. Let him be a heathen. This word is the word we get ethnic from, and it means a man of the nations. And to a Jew, this would mean treat him like a Gentile, which means he has no part nor lot in anything. And the word publican means a tax collector. These were Jewish tax collectors, or any tax collector. They were despised and mistrusted people. And Jesus said, if a person will not respond to the pleas of the congregation to be reconciled to this person, to accept whatever facts there are, to deal with them, then the person is to be like a Gentile outside the covenant relationship of the Jews, which to us would be exclusion from the church. Now, I know there's an issue that people bring up, and that is, can a church forgive sins? And let me tell you something. Not only can a church forgive sins, but you as an individual can forgive sins. Isn't that strange? Oh, I'm not talking about being a priest. I'm not talking about forgiving sins that are committed against God. But I'm saying, if I sin against you, and I come to you and ask you to forgive me, do you know what you can do? You can forgive me. So you can forgive sins. You understand what I'm talking about? I don't know what it might have been. I'd hurt your feelings, whatever it was. But if I come to Jude Brummett and I say, Jude, I want you to forgive me, he has the power to do it. He can say, Brother Penn, I forgive you. So an individual can forgive sin, but not all sins. He can't forgive me for the sins I've committed against God. He cannot justify me before God. You understand that? Only God can forgive sins in the sense of justifying me before himself, based upon the sacrifice of Jesus. But can a congregation of people forgive sins? Yes, they can. We do that. Sometimes during the invitation, somebody will come down front and say, Brother Penn, I've offended this congregation. There's sin in my life that I think will look badly and will point badly to this congregation, and I want to ask the church to forgive me. And you know what the church can do? All of those in favor of forgiving brother or sister so-and-so, would you raise your hand? And everybody raise their hand, and usually they stand here and we go down front and we shake hands with them and embrace them and assure them, we've forgiven you. The church forgives sins. If that's not true, how can this be? And that's what Jesus is talking about in verses 18, 19. Verily I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. And whatsoever ye shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. See, the context doesn't change. In fact, the context doesn't change until chapter 19. And Jesus speaks a parable about forgiving your brother. So we can forgive a person who says, I have sinned against my brother, and we've gone through this process, and now I want the church to forgive me. That is loosing or binding. That is binding on earth and loosing on earth. We can do that as a church. And God is saying, I will recognize the actions of a New Testament church based upon their following these principles that I've laid down. Now, verses 19 and 20 are in the same context. Darrell, I'm afraid you can chew me out now for going over 12 o'clock. You know, usually when you get on somebody, they turn right around and do something to get on you for. But I'm going to ask you to forgive me since you, before the church, you hadn't got a chance. Now notice, again I say unto you, he's following exactly the same context. That if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. You know who these two are here? These are these two witnesses. A lot of people use this to define a New Testament church, but it's not. Jesus is saying that if two witnesses, and I want you to understand that if two witnesses, and that's a very important thing, that if two witnesses, let me find my notes, agree, that is, speak the same thing together, touching, that is, according to or concerning this issue, all or everything, a thing done or to be done, deed, act, factor, matter, that they ask, that is, to entreat or supplicate, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. When two truthful witnesses establish a fact by harmonious testimony, the thing that is sought to be done will occur. Okay? That's what he's saying. Now notice. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. And Jesus here is giving blessing to these two or three witnesses. And he said, when two or three people gather together to form this witness group that's going to testify of facts before a congregation of people, Jesus said, I'm in the middle of them. You know, you'd think that here are two or three people, they're going to come and testify because this thing's really gotten out of hand, really looks bad, a lot of problems in the church, but here are two or three brethren that are going to come and they're going to give the church the facts so that the church can vote on it intelligently. And not many people would say that these two people or three people that are going to speak, that they're acting like a Christian at all. You'd be treated like a dog by most churches, did you know it? What are they up there squealing on that brother for? They've done more sins than he ever did. You ever hear stuff like that? Let him without sin cast the first stone. That doesn't apply here. So these two or three witnesses need the strength of Jesus Christ to tell the truth and do what's right. And he's saying when two or three of these witnesses are gathered together in my name, I'm in the middle of them to strengthen them so they can tell the truth and the church can be informed so that it can do what is right. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the middle of them. And I don't think he's just suddenly changed the context of this so that for two verses now he's going to talk about what constitutes a church where two or three people are gathered together. I don't believe that. Because in verse 21, Peter comes to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and forgive him, and I forgive him. So it's still the same subject. And the same subject continues with a parable down to verse 35. So you're going to have to put verses 19 and 20, pull them completely out of that context and say, this is the definition of a church. No, it's saying that God will own the witnesses, that God will bless the witnesses, that God will testify, that God will strengthen the witnesses so that their testimony is what it ought to be, so that the church can do what it ought to do. God doesn't abandon these two or three witnesses as though they were snitches causing trouble in the church. And I think it'd be comforting to know that if you were called on to testify in some such circumstance, that it'd be comforting to know that God is not looking down at you with anger, but He's owning what you're doing and saying it's the right thing. As I said this evening, we'll conclude this chapter because it's so very, very important to the work and harmony and peace of a New Testament church. Our musicians will come and we'll stand and sing.